Welcome to the Julia and Gino podcast, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from a family perspective. We are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro. Hey everyone, this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Julia and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gina, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
This is going to be an interesting conversation today, huh? I'm going to check out of this because there's going to be no business involved here. So it's just going to be conversations and our feelings and all. I'll let you.
Well, you know, conversation is obviously huge and we're not really taught to have them. And I think that's interesting. You know, we have five daughters, we have one son. And there are things sometimes that are just like, just do what I asked you to do. Like, I don't want to have a conversation about this. And it takes a lot of effort. And I think that's why people don't have them.
Perfect. Yeah. Today, we're excited to be interviewing Dr. Heather Holloman, an associate teaching professor at Penn State, speaker and author. In a culture where social isolation is on the rise, absolutely. We look forward to diving into Dr. Holloman's newest book, The Conversations, Pathways to Connecting Again in an Age of Isolation and Incivility. Whew, I can say that again. She teaches us how to change our relational mindset and apply it in all our relationships, new and ongoing. Welcome, Dr. Heather.
Well, thank you for having me. This is going to be a great conversation. I'm so looking forward to this.
Julia?
I love this because this, to me, this is what I talk about with a lot of people because it is something that you have to learn. You realize that, you know, hey, how's it going? It doesn't really start a good conversation.
So how do we start with everyone on their phones and disconnect?
Well, that's that's another problem. And I want to talk to Dr. Heather about that because it's something different now. I mean, it hurts me sometimes when I see all the kids on a device and they're in the same room and they're usually playing the same game. I'm just like, why don't we just play a game together? So let's talk about, well, both of what Gino just said, but let's first start off about why did you write this book? Where did it come from? And, you know, we all have these ideas to write stuff and, you know, all that stuff, but you actually wrote the book and sent it out. So let's talk about that first.
Well, I was really motivated to write this book and to do all the research because one of the greatest passions of my heart is to connect people in loving community. And I was just seeing the epidemic of loneliness on college campuses. And I read this Cigna Health study of 20,000 U.S. adults that said that almost half the population is reporting that they don't have meaningful conversations. They feel lonely. They feel isolated. And it's beginning to affect their health. So I'm looking at my students and I was like, you guys, your health is breaking down. Your mental health is not doing well. And they're linking it to a lack of warm and loving connections. I also was helping them think through the Harvard Grant study, which is the longest research study ever conducted. And it's trying to answer the question, what is the number one determining factor of a happy life? And the answer is warm connections. So my students were like, all right, how do we get those? And so that's what started the journey. Like, how can we rehabilitate this skill of having conversation? What mindsets do we need? How do we just kind of refresh this whole thing to not only improve students' mental health, but their physical health?
That's amazing. And, you know, I have to say, dealing with a lot of married couples, this is also an issue with them. And people are like, oh, no, it's good. We're fine. Like, but are you, you know, and you get deep down and it's like, no, you're not. You know, but my husband and I didn't have the best of communication until somewhat recently. I'm going to say 5-ish years ago.
Somewhat recently, huh? Throw me under the bus, baby. Okay.
I'm not blaming you.
There's the bus that went by. I just got thrown underneath. So that's my question. What goes wrong? What does Gino do wrong in conversation? Because Julia, she's all good.
I never blamed you.
That's right.
I was just putting it out there.
You guys are so fun. I love watching you interact. You're right. There is a lot of loneliness in marriages. And I'll tell you, here are the four mindsets that all the research shows you need. And usually in a conversation in a marriage, one of those mindsets is missing. So the four mindsets you need, even before you start your conversation, is you're going to be curious. A lot of people just have lost the art of being curious about each other. I teach my children. We're committed to what's called interpersonal curiosity, asking great questions about other people. Number two, you have to believe the best. My marriage was suffering because I approached my husband with judgment, suspicion. when I realized the research behind what it means to give someone what's called unconditional positive regard, it changed my marriage and my relationship with my teen daughters.
Heather, you're not the only one. I think my wife was going from that.
Well, I'm here shaking my head. Yes. That's huge. Yes. All right, we're going to go into each one of these. Keep going.
Well, number three is just express concern. We're not good at carrying one another's burdens, which is a very biblical concept. As a Christian, I was reading the research and I also saw just a lot of great spiritual wisdom. And what does it mean to know what your spouse or your children or your neighbor, what are their major stressors? What thought is keeping them up at night? Do they have any upcoming decisions? And then you express concern. You have supportive communication.
You're on the same team. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're on the same team. Although I may disagree with my wife a lot, although I think she may be right or wrong, we're still on this podcast. We're still on the same team and we're not competing. She could be a rock star. She could beat me at this. It's great, but we're still on the same team. We're still trying to find the same objective.
I think it's funny that you keep talking about this because you are the most competitive person I've ever met.
I love this.
I'm not competitive with you.
I'm teasing. Let's hear number four.
Number four is just sharing your life. But what I found is once you do a lot of training and work and kind of figure out how to grow in these areas, which for me was really maturity issues. I was self-obsessed, so I'm not curious. I was judgmental and suspicious. I needed to change that. I wasn't good at expressing concern and I wasn't vulnerable with people. But then what I learned in my research is what is called the three fresh goals of conversation. A lot of people don't know what a conversation is for. Now in the culture, they think a conversation is argument, that the goal is to win and to shame and to mock. Really, what all the research and the Bible, what I read in the Bible was, look, if you're going to have a warm and loving connection, you should always be doing three things: encourage, help someone in their personal goals, and lead them to a state of marvel. If you do that, you're going to have wonderful relationships, not only in your family, but in your neighborhood and in your workplace.
Can you do that when you disagree with somebody? I mean, I can do that. I just was on with somebody who's Lance a little bit more liberal than me, and he has open-minded, and we're conservative. Jake and myself, we were podcasting this individual, and he actually said, I respect that. We can agree to disagree.
Yes.
And I think people, when they debate, the problem with the debate is somebody has to win and somebody has to lose.
Yes.
A discussion is, I'm going to have a discussion with Heather. My ideas may be better than hers. I'm going to adopt her ideas, or her ideas are better than mine. That's how we should try to at least converse with others, not by trying to win, but by trying to show. It comes back to the trivium, the logic, you know, and that's what it comes down to, at least in my opinion. And I think we've lost some of that. So not going to a conversation with an agenda, but having an open and honest mind and setting aside the emotions for a little bit. And I think
that's
I think it would really benefit a lot of people out there. But then the problem is that people have their ideology or their whole identity is locked into what they think. And that's the paradigm where they are today. But you're not the same person you are 5 years from now.
One of the things continue to grow. That is missing. The first thing you said is curiosity. A lot of people aren't curious about another person. And I tell a lot of people this. I, you know, my whole entire life, I was painfully shy to the point where I didn't talk to anyone. I was very quiet.
Oh my goodness.
But what I learned was how to listen. I'm a really good listener and I could get through conversations and not say a word sometimes, but just by nodding my head and saying, wow, that's really interesting.
And she's really good at being annoying by doing that
too.
She doesn't have to say a word and she can be annoying.
Yeah.
So,
but one of the things I've learned is a lot of people just want to talk. They just want to tell their side. They're not interested in what is happening on their side. And so that's where I'm being curious about a person. You really have to be aware that you're not being curious, you know?
Well, from the time my girls were in kindergarten, we did conversation training at the dinner table. And it began with, will you ask a question where you're curious about your sister or about your mom and dad? Because we're really self-involved. And my students would say, I went on a date. The guy didn't ask me one question. Mm. Or, you know, I'll do a workshop and a spouse will say, we have not asked each other a question in 30 years. Right. You know, we just...
Yes.
So just what does it mean to be curious? And the book is really about six conversational pathways of curiosity. So you can always be curious about social. Who have you been spending time with? Mm-hmm. Who are your friends? The emotional is like, how are you? We tend to do that a lot, but it's only one pathway. Physical, ask people how they slept last night or if they've improved anything in their physical space. Mm-hmm. Cognitive, what have you been thinking about? I no longer say to people, hey, how are you? I'll say, I haven't seen you in a while. What have you been thinking about? I'm really curious. And then volitional is what choices have you been making? And then spiritual, which is my favorite category because I love talking to people about their spiritual lives. Mm. But a lot of people forget you have a lot of categories of curiosity and people love it. It's a way to bless people. It's a way to take interest in them. And what happens is you're going to have a warm and loving connection that's going to boost your mental health, your spiritual life, your physical health, because you're forming warm connections.
Before we get to the six pathways, I have an acronym for everybody to utilize as well. I've heard it called the Ford technique.
Yeah, family, I've heard that.
Occupation, recreation, and dream. If you can think of four of those, and you know, one of my mentors would always say, if you want to be interesting, you need to be interested.
So that's right.
Being interested in others is very important. Mm-hmm. And the question that, you know, I've been trained to ask as an entrepreneur is, what are you most excited about? So if you get somebody speaking about what they're excited about, then they're going to talk to you, not what do you do for a living, but what are you excited about? Because sometimes people are excited doing a hobby. So let's go through those six. You've got social, emotional, physical, cognitive, volitional, you said, and spiritual. How do we start using those and start thinking about those?
Well, what's great, Gino, is all those methods about, you know, I get all those emails, like questions to ask with your teams. By the way, I deeply value entrepreneurship. I love that about you guys. But I found that once you ask that first question, what was happening is you don't know where to go next. Mm-hmm. People get stuck in conversation. So the six pathways aren't just a way to launch that first question, but you have six pathways and endless permutations. So for example, using the Ford method, if I said, or what the example you just gave, Gino, if I said, oh my gosh, Gino, I loved what I read on your website about entrepreneurship. What is most exciting you? Okay, so you would share. Now the conversation could stall there because I don't have a pathway. I don't know where to go. So I have six options. I can say, Gino, that is awesome. Who else do you share that with? Social. Mm-hmm. Tell me more what that excitement feels like, emotional, physical. Does that actually show up in your body or is the work hard for you? Is it hard physically for you? Or I could ask about your physical workspace because entrepreneurs love to talk about their work. Cognitive, how did you decide to go into entrepreneurship? You know, or that's actually volitional. Cognitive would be like, okay, tell me more what you're thinking about. When you think about this project, tell me what's going through your mind. How do you make sense of this? And spiritual, I love asking people, I love this. Do you feel like you have an actual calling from God to be an entrepreneur? Okay, I have six pathways. And then you're going to answer the question. I have endless permutations. It's like a Rubik's Cube. And what I love is I can find out what category you like to talk about. If you're giving me one word answers about the social and emotional, but you love talking about decision-making, I'm going to stay in that pathway. So that's what my husband and I do. He does not like to talk about emotional or cognitive, but if I ask about his work processes, like if I ask about work processes, you know, what he's doing in the yard, what his projects are, he feels so loved.
I don't want the listeners to feel bad if they struggle with this, because I want to ask you a question on this. Is it because of our social makeup and the way we needed to survive? Because we have to think about ourselves. We've been trained. I mean, I think generations to say it's self-preservation. Oh, great. Yeah. Whatever Julie is doing is great, but I need to preserve myself. And then you grow up in that. It's that we're taught the dog eat dog world and there's competition. So we're not trained to think this way. Is that why everything you're saying is blatantly obvious, but nobody does
It's really simple, but if you read the book, you'll see all the social science research, why we're this way. You know, I did talk to a professor who knew I was writing this book, and I shared with him the mindsets because he was experiencing loneliness and feeling disconnected. And when I did the mindsets, he's exactly what you said, Gina. He goes, well, I know my problem. I'm just not interested in other people. Mm-hmm. I just don't care about them. The problem is in a business setting, when you are curious about other people and forming these warm connections, you're actually building social capital. You're building your team. You're doing all these things. But I think children in particular, you'll see sometimes they're just inherently selfish. So it could be just like, you know, a sin issue or something. When we were doing conversation training, for example, when I said, ask dad a question about his day, my five-year-old said, did you think about me all day? And I was like, no, ask about him. And she was like, did you miss me? I was like, no, you're still talking about you. Ask about his day. So yeah, I do think the competition, the division, but people are, it's time for the culture to change. We're suffering. We're isolated. Our health is terrible. I mean, they're linking even warm connections with better immune systems and lower cholesterol. Like I'm so passionate about this just for health reasons, not just my spiritual life. So,
well, the number two after curiosity was, you know, assume the best in the person. And yes. that actually can be really a challenge for a lot of people because it's, you know,
it's so hard.
There's a deep thing in there. And I know that like my husband and I have we have a lot of stories of assumptions and everything where
yes.
You're mad at the other person for
interpretations.
Thinking interpretations. That's right.
You guys are so cute. Yes.
And here you are angry about something. Meanwhile, it's not true.
Only Gino can be yelled at by my wife going to the beach,
yes.
not checking the computer, not checking my texts. And she thinks I'm getting mad at her because I didn't check the text. And when she comes back home, she's like, did you look at your phone? I'm like, no. And she just built up this story in her mind.
Right.
And she'd say, well, Gino puts his phone away.
Right. But my whole point is.
What's your point, baby?
That if we decide, because it's all a decision. And, you know, so you wake up in the morning and that's the thing. It takes a lot of effort to assume the best in a person. And I do this. I talk to my kids all the time about it. People cut us off like on the street. I'm like, they must be going through something. I have no idea what's
exactly.
happening in their head. And it does exactly. change your thought of people. All of a sudden you don't get angry and you're more patient. You have compassion, which you normally wouldn't. And so all of these little things, they're just little by little. I talk to a lot of ladies and we talk about marriage. We talk about motherhood. I'm like, just little by little, if you're getting angry at someone, all of a sudden just think, you know what? I don't know what they're going through. Let me find out.
Well,
you know,
the both of you are speaking really about personal development. I mean, you're talking about a story. It's Stephen Covey's Seven Habits. It's stimulus versus response. As you get older, we get stimulated by something. We respond right away. Instead of saying, I'm reading a book called Mind Works right now as well by Gary Vanderman. It's an amazing book. He talks about perspective and about awareness. That's what you both are talking about.
Yeah.
Becoming aware of your surroundings, becoming aware of your belief bubbles that you have and being able to step outside of them and to look at it from a different perspective. That takes a higher level of intelligence, and it takes just an awareness for people to be aware. And I don't think a lot of people are aware.
Right.
And my marriage was really bad. Oh, go ahead.
I don't have a question. I wanted you to expand upon that.
No, I love that. I mean, my marriage was really bad because I assumed the worst. And then the day I decided to believe the best, it affected everything. You know, he forgot to take the trash out. Instead of me thinking he's this terrible man, why did I marry him? I thought, okay, maybe he didn't take the trash out because he was helping a neighbor who needed something, you know, maybe he's thinking about it. It just changed everything. And then I read a survey of Gen Z, the loneliest generation, but they say the number one thing is they want to be accepted without judgment. But I tell my students, when you see each other, this is what's going through your mind. Who did you vote for? What did you believe about vaccines? What was your stance on Roe v. Wade? I mean, we're vetting each other instead of believing the best. And one of the things I learned in a classroom of incredibly diverse people, different political positions, different social positions, when you're with someone who you profoundly disagree with, I love saying, you know, I disagree. We don't see eye to eye on this, but I really am curious. Can you tell me the story about how you became so passionate about this issue? Suddenly we're in the realm of story. It's loving, it's warm. And they say, well, tell me why you believe this. And then nobody's judging each other. Nobody's hating each other. We're believing the best. We're learning from one another. And it becomes really a beautiful, sacred space.
Well, that's why I think that the issue now is nobody's being taught on how to do this. And it's so, like we talked about earlier, it's so basic, but it's not. We just want to assume the worst in a person. And just like you said, asking the person, what made you, you know, come to believe what you believe? I want to hear the backstory behind it. You're also looking at the person as a human, as a person with the feelings and emotions and something in the background there, and you're getting to know them. And I think that's what's missing right now in marriages, in life, and, you know, motherhood and everywhere, in all parts of area. But what I do love about your book, I have to tell you, Heather, is that you actually have questions. So it's not just like, think of a great question, you know, it's really detailed. And so I really appreciate that because of a lot of times you're like, okay, this is a good idea, but what question do I ask? So I really do appreciate it. So anyone out there, check the book because you're going to really get so much value out of it.
Heather, what are you doing nowadays as far as social media? How are you telling people to utilize it? I mean, obviously 4 to 5 hours a day, people are spending on it. They have no time for anything else. Social media is divisional and it's trying to separate people. How do you incorporate that into your life so it doesn't take over the conversations, your bad conversations?
All right. Are you ready for this, Gino? This changed my life. Before I post anything, I imagine instead of a like or a dislike button, there's a button that says, that helped me. And if no one can click that helped me in my life, why am I posting it? Mm-hmm. It's either self-promotion, it's division. I love social media, though, for timely information. Mm-hmm. I love social media for health. Like, I love, you know, crowdsourcing ideas. I love encouragement, people helping me with my personal goals. You know, this may encourage you. Students are not happy with social media. They're kind of leaving it. They've left Facebook. I have a lot of students that are like, no, I'm not on Instagram. I don't use TikTok. That stuff is bad for my brain. It's a dopamine addiction. I think students are coming to their senses because their mental health is so terrible that they want to protect dopamine. They want to protect their brains. And they know the research that social media is not good for them. But you can use it wisely. Like today, I posted my 15 questions to ask around the holiday table, and everyone's sharing that and getting excited because in my mind, I was like, this could help someone. So that's what I
love
what
that you mentioned. Yeah.
The help, is it helpful?
Absolutely. I love that you mentioned the holidays on the table and stuff, because one of our podcasts was actually about a priest was on about talking about the importance of food and family and sitting at the table and actually having a conversation. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, if I don't agree with my family, we can't get together anymore. I'm like, no. You still can love them. You still can talk about other things. You know, you could still talk about the food. You can still cook with them. And because we forget that even if we don't agree with people, we still are called to love them, you know, and God has put people in our life for a reason. They're right in front of you for a reason. What you choose to do there, gosh, we have so many options, you know.
Well, it's also very countercultural because Romans 12 says to bless your enemies, love those who persecute you. I don't do that well. I want to be that kind of person to help bring people together. And that's really how social change can happen. So,
I think you're doing that, to be honest.
I've had to learn a lot. I mean, the one thing I am learning most of all, which has changed my life forever, is, and I'd love to hear your input on this, Julia, is I finally learned what I'm listening for. I finally learned how to listen.
Oh,
do you want me to tell you what I learned?
I want to hear. Yeah.
Okay. When you're listening, and this is really good in my professional life, this has really helped me at work. You're listening for core values. Mm. Okay. What I mean by that is, so when I was trying to form a warm connection with a colleague, I said, how is your work going? And she said two things. She said, well, I turned in this project. I feel bad. I don't feel like I did my best. And then I said, and another thing, I misunderstood this. And I just felt like I could have done better. So I said to her, it sounds like you really value excellence. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh my gosh, I do. I really do. She felt so loved. Mm. She didn't even realize And so then I went through the six pathways. And it actually led to me getting to talk about my spiritual life, because I said to her, well, when you turn in something and you feel like you can't do your best, what do you do next? Like, volitionally, what's your next choice? How do you get out of that feeling of failure? We had such a good conversation that she said to me, I love talking to you. Please come by my office next week. Now we have lunch every single Wednesday. We're like best friends now, all because I said that. I did it with my neighbor, with my daughter. We were walking and I had a neighbor who I wanted to connect with. And I said, are you going to the game this weekend? And he said, well, I was going to go to the game, but my wife changed the itinerary and my son was supposed to come in and he changed all the plans. And I said to this neighbor, you know, as you're talking, I can tell you really value your schedule and order. You really value having that plan. And he goes, oh my gosh, I do. I really do. And he said, hey, can you keep walking with me? He felt so listening for, and then naming it. Like, I have a friend who values adventure. I deeply value efficiency. It's the military daughter in me. Mm-hmm. You can love people so well when you're like, I can tell you value this. It changed my relationship with my daughter. When I said what I thought she valued, she felt so loved. And there's no judgment. She values this. I don't value it. She does. Now I can ask questions about the things she values.
That's amazing. I love that you said that, because that I think we can all learn from that, because it's not about us. It's not what we see in the person. I can't believe, you know, that guy's mad at his wife. You know what I mean? A lot of people are like, oh, look at this guy, angry at his wife.
But it's always the guy's fault.
Usually. Come on.
Yeah. Have you learned anything? Because you're a natural listener. Have you learned any secrets?
Well,
I know
that's
it's
the
your
thing.
Interview.
I'd no, love to I yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, it's funny because there's so much that we're missing when we're busy. When we're listening to something, there's so much we miss out on the person's tone of voice, like hearing their tone of voice, their mannerisms. If they're looking around uncomfortable, okay, well, now they're, obviously they're uncomfortable. They're holding something back. They don't know if they trust you yet. You know, we can look at the word phrases they use, just like you were mentioning, and kind of pick apart that. Well, why did they use those words, I wonder? Mm-hmm. And, you know, just by asking, well, what do you mean by that? And just asking a little deeper question in what they're saying. Well, tell me more about that. I'm interested in what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
If, when people know you're interested, oh my gosh, will they open up? And all of a sudden now you're having lunch with them every Wednesday.
So you Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you two are listening right now. How do you find out in the book, you ask about a default conversation style. What is this conversation style that, that you possess or that I would possess? How do I figure out my own?
Well, what in the book, there's an assessment. And when I took the assessment for myself, even though I wrote the assessment, I was like, oh my gosh, I just love talking about ideas and my spiritual life. I talk about Jesus all the time and I'm always talking about ideas. I was like, I got to get out of those default conversational pathways because my husband does not like that. And my daughters do not, they feel judged if I ask about, you know, what are you learning from the Bible or what have you been thinking about? How do you feel emotionally? I learned from my daughters that most young people love the social category. Tell me about your friends. Mm-hmm. What decisions are your friends made? You know, or they love to talk about their spaces. Like at the holiday table, if you say, okay, tell me how you've changed your bedroom or what's new in your dorm room, they will open up. It's low stakes. It's fun. They also, there's a lot of decision fatigue and stress with young people without saying like, tell me about your future plans. One thing I'm learning is, what is a stressful decision you're trying to work through right now? I'm not going to give you advice unless you want, but like, tell me what's going on in your mind. You're going to find that people like to talk about all sorts of different pathways and you may be stuck in one of them. You may be, someone may be listening. They only ask about the weather. They only ask about sports. It's time to try out like another category of conversation.
And that takes practice. I want to be clear because a lot of times we're like, well, I don't know how to do that. And we just leave it at that and keep talking about sports and the weather. I just encourage everyone that listening, try something different because you've done the same thing forever. You know, even with your spouse, your children, you ask the same questions over and over again. Try something different. I promise you it's going to change your every single relationship in that you have. But the hard part is it goes from about us, a lot of the conversations we wanted about us, to the other person. And it's a very selfless type of thing to do, but I love it. I love learning things about people. And a lot of times when we say we're lonely, it's because all we're doing is thinking about ourselves. We don't realize that
yes,
there's a whole world out there that are very interesting people. Get to know them.
Yes. Well, some people might say at this point, like, I'm going to be doing all the work. I'm going to be selfless. I'm going to ask these great questions. I'm going to have the mindsets and the goals on my conversation partner who hasn't read the book is not going to ask me one thing. What do I do? That's the number one question I'm getting from people. Well, okay, you'll love this, Juliet. You can actually train your conversation partner. So when I'm having a great conversation and I've asked all these great questions and the person has not turned and asked me one thing, I literally say to them, I have had so much fun asking you these great questions. I'm really curious what question you're going to ask me about my life. If they don't know what to say, I tell them, I'm secretly hoping you'll ask me about this. In fact, if you don't know what to ask your conversation partner, you can say, what question do you like people to ask you? You could even say, what question should I definitely not ask you? I ask teenagers that all the time. I'm like, look, I really want to get to know you. What question should I not ask you? And they always say, do not ask about our future plans. It's too stressful. I don't know where I'm going to college. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know about my internship. But you can train your partner and you can actually be really honest. I've been honest with my colleagues. Look, I'm trying to grow in the art of conversation because social capital matters so much. What can we do to have this warm connection? Like, what do you like to talk about? You can just be honest and say, and I'm really bad in this area. Help me grow. Like, how are you experiencing me? So you'll find you can be really authentic and share your life as you grow in this art.
That's beautiful. I absolutely love that. Let me just make one point, because a lot of times the other person doesn't know how to ask a question. They don't know what to say. So you're asking the person all these questions, they're answering them. And then they're like, I don't even know what to ask. And I was there. So I'm going to be that person. And I love how you help them out. That's brilliant, I think, because some people just don't know what to do.
I have a sticky note on here. We did a podcast with a gentleman named Michael Bungay Stanier. He wrote a book. It's a coaching book. It's more of how you coach your employees. And the questions that I have here is, what's on your mind? And what else? What's the real challenge for you? What do you want? How can I help? If you say yes, what do you say no to? And what was most useful to you? Those are questions that are really empowering questions.
Yeah.
My point to that is I went through them really quick. If you want them, listen to them again or listen to the podcast we did with him. But those are all really open-ended empowering questions. And he uses them in a sequence when you're trying to coach your employees or trying to talk to your employees. See, I'm going to throw a little business in here.
I knew you would do it. It's a lot of volitional. If you notice, they're all in the volitional category or emotional. Mm-hmm. So that works great for businesses. I think your listeners are going to love that tip.
So like you said, what's on your mind? And, you know, what else are you talking? What are you struggling with? What's that challenge for you? Because sometimes we can't really express the challenge, but asking that question gives them the opportunity to share what their struggles are. And, you know, how can I help? You know, what can I do? If you're a leader, how can I help? Well, I need some time off. I'm a little pressure. Can we hire somebody else? All these questions really, there are conversational, but they're really, when you're having the conversation, you're a leader, you're more of a coach than anything else. You're just trying to coach people up and trying to listen to them. And that's what I think a lot of people lack.
Well, in the business setting, what I would advise in all my research is when you express concern about what they share, I would do a follow-up the next week in the hallway and say, hey, how is that going, what we talked about? Because they need to know that you are continuing to be concerned about that. And then the other thing people don't do is they don't share their life. Mm-hmm. So like if you're a leader and you're like, oh, how was your weekend? And the person shares and then they say, what about you? What did you do? And you don't go vulnerable. You don't say, you know what? I had a great time, but we were really struggling, you know, at the volleyball game. I kind of got in this argument with the coach. You know, share your life. You got to be a real person. There's going to be a bond there. And guess what? Your employees, your team, they're going to perform better for you because you're going to have a warm connection.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that because, you know, we do talk openly about, you know, our struggles, marriage, personal life, motherhood, all of it. And when I talk, I'm 100% real. I'll tell you anything you want to know because that's the only way we were going to connect with people because everyone used to look at me like she's so perfect. She has her little kids and, you know, she doesn't have any troubles.
Great husband.
Homeschooling. Right. The best husband.
I mean? I got everything. And I remember one day thinking, where are you getting that from? Like because I never complained about it. So people just assumed. And I thought, my gosh, all these people I know are struggling, but they're all afraid to say something. And I thought, so am I. I'm afraid too. Why am
that
I afraid?
That is awesome.
Because I don't want to look that I like I'm having a hard time or, you know. But once I did, people started opening up. I mean, my husband just had an event and we talked about just working together on stage there. And I just used one word. I used the word lonely and motherhood. And the lady came up to me after. She's like, I heard that where I just started crying because you understood. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's crazy. That's incredible. But it's real. And that's how you really connect with people is to be human, is to be open and say, yes, things are difficult, but here's what I did. Here's what I still do. And I still struggle. You know what I mean? So I appreciate that you're out there also being like that. That's what we need.
Well, you know what I noticed about that is nobody's asking who you voted for or what you believed about vaccines. They're talking about real things like how are you sleeping with your newborn? How are you doing with the loneliness of motherhood? I don't care who you voted for. Who's making dinner tonight? Like get into their lives.
Their real lives. 100%.
That really helps. Yes.
I love that.
Heather, before we end the conversation, where can the listeners get a hold of you? Go to your website. Where can they buy the book?
Well, you can always buy the book on Amazon or Moody Publishers, but at heatherholloman.com, if you click on books and then click on the 6 conversations, I put up 3 resources for your listeners, all free. You can download an excerpt. You can download my 100 favorite questions, and you can download a little worksheet that kind of goes through how to not get stuck in conversation. That's all at heatherholloman.com. And I also blog every day. And if you go to the November 17th blog, you'll find 15 great questions for the holiday.
Holloman. Holloman.
That's right. That's right.
I love that. Everyone has to look at those questions because they are super powerful and you're going to have the best holidays ever. That's what I'm hoping.
My favorite one is how did you most procrastinate this semester? Ooh. You will get your college students to open up and there'll be so many laughs. You'll learn bizarre things.
I'm going
to
ask my
basically, how do you
question.
Waste time?
Yes.
Oh, I
how
love
do you
it.
Waste time?
How did you procrastinate this past week? I can give you the whole list.
I want to know. Do you know, I heard the best answer I got was stress baking. People who bake banana bread rather than study for my exam, they will bake banana bread. We were laughing so hard about the whole story. We learned about the recipe from the grandmother. We learned everything. So anyway, I know. I don't want to end. I love that.
Maybe that's why I cook so much.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's probably why. I just figured it out.
Maybe because you have an Italian husband who likes to eat. Maybe that's.
Hey, I'm half Italian. I love it. Chicken Parmesan.
Oh, there you go. My son. That's his favorite. Everything. If I ever ask him, hey, Michael, what do you want? Chicken Parm is good, Mom. All
right. Do you make biscotti? Do you make your own like Italian treats? I'm getting rainbow. You know the rainbow cookies, the Italian.
Yeah.
We're having those delivered in a couple days for the holiday because my neighbor knows how to make Italian. Are they called Italian rainbow cookies?
I don't know what they're called, to be honest.
Everyone knows what they are. They're annoyingly good.
It's really hard to get a bakery that'll do it. So we paid her because I was like, you need to start. She's
they're hard
just
to
doing
make.
It. Yeah, they're so
good.
We
made them once. It was fun. But then we ate
It's a lot of layers.
We don't want them. Yes, it's a huge.
So conversations. I think this is a great podcast and it's going to launch before the holidays. Yes. So there's a lot of tips for everybody. Go back and listen to the show. Go back and listen to the six pathways.
But I do promise everyone listening, it is so 100% worth it to put all this effort into learning how to have a conversation. I promise you it will change every relationship you have. And even with like the random people at Publix and the grocery store.
That's right.
Because I've
That's
had some
right.
amazing conversations. I've gotten them teary-eyed sometimes. My kids are like,
and the Uber driver.
Why, Mom? Like, I don't know.
No, my hairstylist last night, I got my hair cut last night. If you notice, it's so cute.
I did. It looks adorable.
My hairstylist actually said after the haircut, he said, I cannot believe how much I love talking to you. And he was like, look, you've got to come back. I know you come once a year, but you got to come back here in 12 weeks. I'm cutting your hair again. And we're going to talk about this, and that. It was just so
amazing.
Cute. So you're going to find great success with conversations.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
Are we going
to? Yeah, no, it's been incredible. I just want to, again, thank you for putting yourself out there. I know it's a lot of work to write the book and, you know, the blog and everything, but you're doing such an amazing job. Obviously, God has great plans for you. So.
Down below,
you're an
notes.
Encourager.
Seriously.
We got the link in the show notes. So if anybody wants to check the book out, go out and buy it just in time for the holidays. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.